We dare to hope for a better, brighter, more equal and inclusive world, and this year, we're going to go out and build it.
The world is taking notice that women birth babies and revolutions.
The anger is really palpable, especially with the headlines.
It represents women's rights and what we need to change about society today.
Sounds from this weekend and the second year of women's marches all around the country. Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's been 1 year since millions of women and men all over the world demonstrated for the Women's March of 2017, protesting the newly inaugurated president and marching for women's issues, including reproductive rights. Professor Dana Fisher of the University of Maryland has surveyed more than 1,000 of the participants in these and other major demonstrations over the course of the last year. Marches are one thing, but practical political action is another. And I asked Dana Fisher if these marches constitute a bona fide political movement.
There's no question in my mind, Todd, that this is, in fact, a political movement at this point. But I just want to stress that it goes beyond just women's rights. Although the Women's March was the spark that ignited the resistance, and it turned out the conservative estimates right now are 1.6 million people this weekend were in the streets marching for the anniversary. But it goes well beyond just women's issues.
How far beyond?
So much so that this weekend, the people who turned out reported to my research team that 78% of them came out because they were motivated by issues of immigration. Over 60% of them were motivated by issues of racial justice. They were motivated by issues of the environment. They were motivated by issues of labor in this country. It really runs the gamut of progressive issues at this point.
So what do we know about how much more politically engaged women and others who are marching have become since the march last year? Not just going to marches and making placards, of course, but really getting engaged in politics in some way.
People are coming out and they're doing much more than just marching and yelling in the streets and making signs, of course. They are contacting elected officials. They are attending town hall meetings. Many of them are contacting the media to express their voices. And what we've seen over the year, so this is now we've been collecting data since last Women's March all the way through this year, through this past weekend, is we're seeing those numbers have been holding steady or even going up. So, for example, contacting an elected official, 61% of the people in the crowd this weekend reported contacting an elected official in the past year specifically to address them about issues that were concerning them.
Now, what does that number tell you and other numbers you have about political engagement? Because there's the problem of the self-selected group, right? The person who's likely to come out in March is the person who's likely to call the member of Congress, and people who don't march maybe are busy with other things.
Oh, very true. But at the same time, the person who comes out and marches is not just marching. They're also making a lot of noise. And they're making a lot of noise in their communities. I mean, one of the things that I think is remarkable about this year's Women's March is the fact that the Women's March was actually mobilized by state and local organizations to bring people out. Last year, there were a lot of national groups that were saying, come to Washington, D.C., come march on the Mall after the inauguration. This year, actually, the march in D.C. was coordinated by a bunch of local groups working in Virginia, in fact. But still, people came, they persisted, and they resisted. But what I think it really tells us is that those people may very well self-select into being more active, but more people are self-selecting into being active than ever before.
61% of people who you talk to are calling their member of Congress. Some numbers. What else did you find?
Here's a very interesting one. 11% of the people who came out this weekend self-identify as moderates, and 4% identify as politically to the right or right-leaning. That's really interesting in contrast to last year, where at the Women's March in 2017, only 6% identified as being moderate, 1% identified as being to the right. So we're now at 15% of the people in the streets were actually moderates or right-leaning, which is really interesting and shows the ways that the resistance is expanding in really interesting ways that are important to politics and certainly important to the midterm elections.
There have been a couple of special elections and off-year elections last year, Virginia, Alabama. What did those hard numbers at the polls tell you?
The hard numbers at the polls tell us that there are people who are supporting the more progressive candidates. They're coming out, and they're coming out quite substantially. I mean, Democrats historically tend not to participate in midterm elections as much as Republicans do. But I don't think that that's what we're seeing. Even with the poll numbers that came out this weekend, with regard to how the Democrats might do this coming fall. I think that given what we're seeing with regard to people participating in the streets and with all of the different special elections that have happened, there's no question that there is a blue wave coming. The question is, how far will the wave go? And to me, the other question is, if the blue wave is successful, what happens to the resistance?
And, you know, Dana, there have been reports from the political parties and from early primaries around the country, early races shaping up, that there's a large number of women throwing down and running for office. What can you tell us about that?
There are a number of organizations that have emerged trying to get what we would consider, I guess, non-traditional, as silly as that might seem, non-traditional candidates onto ballots, helping to get women to run for office, getting scientists to run for office, getting people of color to run for office. All of those organizations are extremely busy, and we will see a very different slew or cohort of people running for office in primaries this year. I think one of the things that I hope will come out of this movement and this time in America's history is that people, there's no question they're starting to pay attention, but they need to pay attention to the primary period as well, because primaries are where a lot of the big decisions about policy directions are made.
I know quite a few people in my own life, Dana, who always voted, I suppose, but were never really engaged in politics. Not all of them liberal, by the way, who are now engaged in the local political party one way or the other, in some cases marching one way or the other, certainly calling members of Congress. You see it a lot, just anecdotally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other thing that – I mean, one of the measures that we use as social scientists when we are interested in civic engagement and political participation is talking about politics at the dinner table. And this is something that I have people – frequently from all walks of life, including my husband's colleague, who said to me, my kids, for the first time ever, actually want to talk about politics at the dinner table. You know, people are engaged. I mean, how many people in the White House on Capitol Hill can your average person across the country now name and can get a sense of what they stand for and what political issues are being discussed? What's the focus of the shutdown? I think all of these things matter a lot. I mean, and they matter a lot for democracy, and they matter a lot for America. So, I mean, I do study the resistance, but this isn't just about left-leaning politics in America either. This is just about America and America's democracy, I think.
Dana R. Fisher, professor of sociology at the University of Maryland. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.